Buenas.
Oui. Yeah. Bonjour, cinéphiles. Ouais. Buenas and welcome back to Film Posers for Boricua's ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today we are back with another round of a Film Posers film breakdown. And this time, we are discussing none other than Celine Sciamma's Portrait of a Lady on Fire from 2019, or better yet known as one of the most hallowed films of all time, according to me. And a lot of other people. I mean, if you look at your, if you go right now to your letterbox and you see all the reviews of people you follow or that follow you, they're all going to be either 4 stars and up. But Portrait of a Lady on Fire, let's get into a little bit of the film, a little bit of information on it. So, of course, it is a film from 2019. It is a French historical romantic drama film written and directed by Celine Sciamma, starring Noémie Merlant and Adèle Haenel, also marking it as Sciamma's 4th feature film. So she really graduated with this one. It is set in France in the late 18th century. The film tells the story of a lesbian affair between an aristocrat and a painter commissioned to paint a portrait. Portrait of a Lady on Fire was selected to compete for the Palme d'Or at the 2019 Cannes Film Festival. The film won the Queer Palme at Cannes, becoming the first film directed by a woman to win the award. Sciamma also won the award for Best Screenplay at Cannes. The film was theatrically released in France on the 18th of September 2019. It was nominated as well for Independent Spirit Awards, Critics' Choice Awards, and Golden Globe Awards for Best Foreign Language Film, and was chosen by the National Board of Review as one of the top 5 foreign language films of 2019. Embala recibió mucho elogio. It's one of the best reviews. It was one of the best reviews films of 2019, if I'm not mistaken, con Parasite. And, of course, they were literally the 2 best films of that year, both acquired by Neon, which is why Portrait did not compete at the Oscars, because, of course, France did not select it. But also, Neon just put all their eggs in the Parasite basket. And, I mean, to good use, because look what happened with it later in 2020 at the Academy Awards. So, you lose some, but you win a lot. But still, we still feel the pain from not seeing Portrait competing for Best International Film at the Oscars, or at least I do. Maybe people have moved on, but I haven't.
We're on your side, Josie. We are still upset about it.
I think we could have had both.
They could have.
Francia with their little Lemis.
Yeah.
Anyways, enough about my love for Portrait that I literally have mentioned time and time again in the podcast. And if you don't know, hi, my name is Josie Melendez, and I really love Portrait of a Lady on Fire. It's my favorite film of all time. But let's find out. How did Portrait of a Lady on Fire come into your lives, posers? Let's start with Juan.
Hello, my name is Juan, and I have seen Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Hi, Juan.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bonjour.
Oui, oui, baguette. So I discovered this film in 2020, a year where a lot of things happened, obviously. And Josie was very much highly recommending this film. And I said, you know what? I'm going to trust her recommendation. And I'm going to watch this film. I am usually not someone who will watch an international film all the time. You know, I will see one every now and then. You know, there's the occasional Parasite, where I sit down, I watch, and end up falling in love with it. So when I saw how much hype this was getting during awards season before we were robbed, I said, okay, this has the momentum. Let's see what it's about. And I gave this 5 out of 5 flames on Letterboxd.
Wee wee.
This is, in fact, one of the best international films I have seen. I think it is a perfect film. I can't find a single flaw with it. I will say, I know a lot of people say, you know, you don't have to rewatch a film to end up loving it more, all that. But can I be honest? I feel with one perfect viewing of Portrait, for some people, it's enough because it sticks with you. Like when I was doing my research for this, I'd only seen it once and I still remember so many of the scenes. And I said, that's how good this film is. It sticks with you. So I really love that. If you have not seen this film, like Josie says, first of all, hi. Have you not been paying attention to our podcast for a bit? If you're new, I understand. You should check this out. I think it's still on Hulu.
Yes, it's on Hulu.
Oui. All right. You got a perfect option. It's beautiful. It's heartbreaking. It's melancholic. And I got to say, it exceeded all of my expectations. I knew I was going to like it because Josie and I usually have similar taste when it comes to films. I didn't expect to love it this much. It is Criterion worthy.
Yes. And then it went to the Criterion. No way we won.
Absolutely. And I got to say, it's not the first time France has snubbed Celine Sciamma. Is that not correct, unfortunately?
It is not the first time. You are correct.
It's very unfortunate.
Yes.
Because I've noticed her films are getting better and better. But Portrait really was the moment that everyone could have gotten behind.
Yeah, I do love how Petit Maman is a more subtle kind of silent film compared to Portrait. Because Portrait is just so loud. Which is ironic because it doesn't have a score, which we're going to be talking about later. But I love how she kind of like laid it back just a bit with Petite Maman. It feels like a nice caramel hot drink, like a hot caramel drink on a fall day. Pero Anna, how did Portrait come into your life?
While I was running my Parasite campaign in Twitter, there was a lot of noise with Portrait of a Lady on Fire. And I kind of wanted to check it out. And it was directed by Celine Sciamma. And I already watched a film by her. Well, she wrote the animated film My Life as a Zucchini. And I liked it. So I just wanted to check it out. And when I did, oh boy, that was something. And like Juan said, it does stick out. Especially the ending. Like, of all the things that I can remember, is the ending. It is unforgettable. It is one of those few films that I can say that is perfect. And yeah, okay. What else that I can say about this film? That it's good. There's nothing wrong with it.
I love how you just unlocked a memory of how 2019 and 2020 was basically like Portrait Nation and Parasite Nation just ruling Twitter.
Good times.
And then there was me, J-Lo, running the account for her supporting actress nomination.
And The Lighthouse.
Oh,
yeah. We could have had it all.
That was the last time the Academy Awards were, like, exciting.
That was the last time that I had fun when I was on film Twitter.
Same. That was the last good year.
The world ended
after Parasite won Best Picture.
Yeah. It was like, we don't need anything else. And that was like the Jake Gyllenhaal meme where he just disappears into the fog.
The entire world, alright, we peaked. Goodbye.
I will say, going a little bit off topic for a second, I don't know why. I feel like 2022 cinema and 2023 Oscars are gonna be spicy just because the Nope trailer, The Northmen, we're getting some good trailers recently, and I'm like, oh, is this year gonna make me want to like live again for cinema?
Hopefully.
And Spider-Verse coming back to take the animated Oscar.
Yes.
Tengo esperanza. This year is shaping up to be a good one.
Oh, no. Continue.
Yeah, Gabriela, how did this one come into your life?
So, I remember seeing people talk about this film, like, right after, I think when I first heard of it, it was right after it had won the Queer Palm at Cannes. And then it made its way to TIFF and other film festivals, and I kept hearing a lot about it and seeing pictures. And then I remember when Josie was doing her master's, that she was going to the Savannah Film Festival. And she said, oh, this movie's playing there. Said movie, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. And I said, oh, I've heard good things about it. Let me know. Oh, she let me know, right?
And that was all she wrote.
Literally, I remember. I think you didn't know that it was French. I think you There was
My whole thing was like, okay, then this is how portrait came into my life. So I was doing my master's at the Savannah College of Art and Design. And the Savannah College of Art and Design, aka SCAD, has a film festival. And I was looking at the lineup for that year, which is 2019. And I see Portrait of a Lady on Fire. And I don't know why. I was like, I am drawn to this. This sounds interesting. Because the description was very vague. Of course, back then, unless you were following the film, you didn't know it was a romance. Between, especially like between two women.
Mm-hmm.
So I just remember being like, is this gay? And Gabriela was like, I think it is. I'm like, oh, cool. And I was like, please, I want to watch this. So I was lucky enough that I got a gold pass, which gave me access to like all the events and all the films. So I was like, haha, hon, we're going to watch Portrait. I remember getting all dressed up and I'm like, haha, let's go. Listen, I watched this film. Like, my first viewing of this film was at a film festival in a museum. How poetic is that? And I just sit down and I remember just feeling this buzz. Like, it was like a little buzzing. And I'm like, oh, am I about to experience cinema? It was weird. I've never felt that way before a film. I sit down. I'm just watching it, and like from beginning to end, I never wanted to look at my watch. I never, like, it was like everything else stopped existing, and then it just kept getting better and better. And then I was sobbing uncontrollably by the end with Eloise, and I'm like, this is cinema. I was just sobbing. So I logged it with 5 stars, and I was like, sweet. And that's how Portrait came into my life.
I remember so vividly you telling me in detail how much you cried during.
Es que I was just en buen puertorriqueño. Yo estaba bien pamá. Because I couldn't stop crying, and I went alone. So I was sitting in between two guys. They were just like, ¿Esta tipa está bien? Is she okay? Do we have to call someone? You know, like, it was one of those times where I genuinely didn't care. I was just like, wow, I just feel genuinely moved right now. And I think that's beautiful. But at the same time, I was like, these two dudes, they just stood up and left. And then I was, yo fui una la última en salir. It was like my corpse just stayed there. Like, that film killed me. But in the best way. Now that you know how Portrait came into our lives. Basic breakdown, we're doing this episode a little bit differently. There is a lot to be said about Portrait, and a lot has been said about Portrait. There are a lot of articles, a lot of video essays, because how could you not? It is one of, like, I feel like this film should be taught in film school, especially when it comes to screenwriting. We are going to be dissecting 4 scenes. Each of us selected a scene, and we're going to be going in order. So just let the audience know why you chose that scene, and then we'll just have a little chit chat, starting with one.
Oui, oui, baguette. Hello. I am here. I have my beret on. Let's go. I have my Emily in Paris outfit on. Okay, so the scene I chose is called If You Look at Me, which is the painting scene. So I chose this scene because as I watched it, my eyes were glued to the screen. I was spellbound by the scene. It's really just a great emotional scene that you can dissect and you can find so many things. And as I rewatched the scene, I noticed more things than I did in the first time. The clip is available on YouTube. So first off, the chemistry between these two characters, it's just fantastic. I mean, talk about an Oscar snub. Because see, in this scene, you start to see Marianne and Eloise start to analyze each other. And you start to see the walls come down and you see how they are able to not just identify their mechanisms, but it's also a fantastic exhibit of how these characters end up seeing that they're not so different after all. There's a tension between them, but it's more of an acknowledgement that just as the one being painted is vulnerable, so is the painter as they start to learn more about each other and as that process continues. Now, what I really love about the scene is that Marianne starts the scene thinking she has everything under control. You know, she has the power because usually the painter and the muse, the painter has the power to portray everything that the muse is providing. But by the end, it's the painter who is almost losing it to the temptation of her, in this case, desires. You start to see those cracks. And she finally feels seen by someone, if, in my opinion. I don't know if Josie feels the same way. But also, Marianne feels this sense of disbelief as if she's been knocked down a peg.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love how her face changes.
Yes, that's exactly what I love. Because I was going to mention, the way Eloise is presented at first on screen, she has this wide shot. And it's meant to, like, expose her through the eyes of the artist. But in the end of the scene, Marianne is seen through the wide shot as she is the one left vulnerable and exposed. Because at first he had the close shot on Marianne, but now you see how the tables literally turn when it comes to the camera shots. And Marianne's not only left vulnerable and exposed, but she's left without any power or control that that painter usually has over their muse. And you see Eloise also with a more focused shot on her face, which shows, you thought I was exposed, but see, I'm like an open book. A picture is worth 1,000 words. And she is, in fact, less vulnerable than the painter, which I love because at first the film presents it as they're just getting to know each other. But in fact, you kind of get this idea that we're not only not so different. I feel like this was destined to meet. It has that fate. We were meant to meet fate. And I love that scene. I feel I could rewatch that scene a couple of times because it is just so masterfully directed that I literally dissected all of those things. And it's like a 2-minute scene. There is so much to unpack there. And it's wonderful.
Yeah, I love how the scenes can be quite short and still have a significant impact. Also, something that came to me while rewatching that scene for this episode was I started thinking about La Pintura de la Menina de Velázquez. Just because of that whole concept that, like, I know, yo soy guapa. Velázquez, yo soy guapa. Gracias. Pero... But I mean, it has a point because in that painting, you see, like, it's one of the first times where the author is included in their work. So it also, you could dive into that sense of authorship and subject and the way both could be interchangeable or how also, like, do we kill the author, etc. So there's that aspect, which I'm getting into a whole other thing on theory, literary theory when it comes to that. But I love that aspect of the presence of the artiste and the subject in a scene.
The wind chimes approve.
The wind chimes, no, honestly. It's just that, it's like Juan said, when the tables have turned, because she thought she had the upper hand, but no, she didn't. And they're just basically just both, not gonna lie, this scene, I was like, oh my god, that's so juicy, because they were both checking themselves out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
It also shows how much they've been paying attention to each other.
The way that Marianne was too stunned to speak.
As were we all.
I love
But I love it. She gets her payback because then like Marianne and Eloise are both too stunned to speak by the end of it. But they like understand each other.
Uh-huh.
I also love the deconstruction of the power dynamic that it's usually a male painting a female. Yes. I love this perspective. And I also love that, yes, it's between two women. So you have that, you know, intellectual observation. Whereas a woman could definitely read a man through the ground and drag him across the mud. Absolutely.
Yes.
But mm-hmm. here, it's, in fact, more intense between these two than it would have been with a man, which is something I love, because these characters, you not only start to see how they think, but you also start to see how they're literally going to grow throughout the film. You start to see them open up emotionally, and as they open up, you definitely start to relate more to the characters and you start to feel more for them.
Yeah, it's a very solid build up to them finally allowing each other to like be intimate with each other emotionally, be it physically, be it mentally, and even spiritually. It just takes a while to build up to that. And I really like that you chose the scene because it's the one that has been The one that people use the most because it does uphold the thesis of the film about the viewer and being viewed. But also, I just love how it's just that feeling of being stripped bare and being left raw and vulnerable. Like, you see it all on Marianne's face. She was not expecting that. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
And you can also see the difference between the female gaze and the male gaze here.
Oh, definitely.
Yes.
Yeah. Where here you can see how literally Eloise just deconstructs the tiniest details of her. And it's not even sexualized or anything.
Yeah. No, I really love how this scene is just, I like calling it ferociously intimate because it just feels so raw. But nothing's happening. Like, you are not exploring, like, sensualizing the female body or anything. And it's still very much intimate. So that's on the female gaze, mama.
Coming.
And it even advances the romance better than the male gaze would. Because there's layers. There's that emotional depth to the scene. I honestly picked the scene because not only do I love it, it was honestly that if they were going to put it at the Oscars, that's the scene I think they should have played during the awards ceremony. I mean, any clip would have worked, but that one, to leave the audience gagged like that, they would have been like, oh, wait, maybe there's a chance.
The chokehold this film would have had.
On Academy voters.
Honestly, the chokehold that this film has on every single person that loves it.
I'm in.
Like, it is just pure chokehold. You talk to someone about Portrait of a Lady on Fire, it's like you need to sit down. So, like,
yeah,
you can't talk about that film standing up. You have to sit down.
There is a burning flame over my heart caused by Siama.
Yes.
And it can't be put out. So I'm going in order of the film. So I'm going in chronological order. Okay. So next up is my scene. So I picked the Orpheus and Eurydice scene where they're reading the myth of Orpheus and Eurydice at the dining table.
Wait.
I chose this scene because this was when I knew it was my favorite film of all time. Because, I mean, that summer we had also just, like, it was my first time in New York. We saw Hadestown.
Oh,
I was riding the Orpheus and Eurydice train. And then when I got to that part of the film, I was like, wait, are they reading Orpheus and Eurydice in French?
Oh, my God, I remember.
I was ascended. So this scene means a lot to me because it is what made me say, like, yes, this is my favorite film of all time, and it stays that way. So, of course, during the scene, they are reading the myth of Orpheus and Eurydice, and then they themselves are deconstructing what it means as a myth and what they take away from it, which ultimately leads to us understanding these apparitions of Eloise that Marianne keeps having, but also the payoff to those apparitions, which is when they say goodbye to each other. Mm-hmm. And of course, the painting at the end that Marianne makes of Orpheus and Eurydice and her take on it that is inspired by their conversation. Mm-hmm. So of course, it's just so wholesome because they spent the day cooking before this scene. So essentially it feels like they've all been playing house and it's great. Just picture them having their own family and their happy lesbian villa by the French shore.
Amen.
Just reading poetry to each other. That's the happy ending I want. But we're not here for happy endings. If not, this film wouldn't be as great as it is.
Emotional damage.
So we love emotional damage in this house. What I love the most is how, again, it's that aspect of owning each other that Juan mentioned in the previous scene. Because Marianne thinks she's so smart. Because Marianne is a woman of the world while Eloise is more sheltered. So she comes in this with kind of a swagger each time where she thinks she's like the brightest one in the room. And then Eloise always shows her up, which I really love. Because in here she's like, la compañera, she's confused because she's like, but why did he turn around? Which we get, like, why did you turn around, Orpheus? And then Marianne, to give a response, she says, maybe he made a choice not the choice of the lover, but of the poet. Mm-hmm. And then they keep reading. And then, like, okay, I love how Marianne is still, like, smiling. She's like, oh, look at me being so clever. And then Eloise says, maybe it was her. Maybe she said, turn around. And Marianne's face just falls. And that's how the scene ends. And I'm like, I love these two owning each other. Because each time, you just, like, you think that she's offended or something. But really, she's like, damn, do I love this woman? It's just great. I just love it.
I mean, this scene practically sets the tone of their relationship throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
And the ending, too. But also, I love the way how, like, Marianne, each time she's just getting bamboozled by Eloise in each scene. and she just, like, stares at her very enamored, even though she gets, like, got caught off in each conversation,
yeah.
Or so. If I will, that will say.
Sí, es que es bien sweet, yeah. Pero also, es que literalmente cada vez, it's just, es otra vez como la escena de Juan, they just find a way to be so intimate without it being sexual. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. And how they're very, yeah, flirtatious with each other, but very subtle.
Sí.
It's the yearning. It's all about the yearning.
It's all about the yearning.
And the foreshadowing of that scene as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, que ahí se le cae la cara. Yo, it hurts more when you know how it ends. Mm-hmm.
At the end, ella se convierte in the poet.
Yeah.
Qué depresión.
I know. Because it literalmente, that scene is basically them. Like, Siama modeled them after Orpheus and Eurydice, because at the end of the day, they can't be together. Mm-hmm. And that is why we love this film, because it's so tragic. Like, that's why we keep holding on, because it is kind of like, again, like bringing it back to Hadestown, which is what I love so much about the end, that it's like Hermes is singing, that if you're not familiar with Hadestown, Hermes sings like, it's a sad tale, but we keep singing it again in hope that maybe this time he won't turn around. So that's kind of like maybe, like, if you're like me, who was a super weirdo when she was a kid, that she would just rewatch Titanic hoping that the next time the boat wouldn't sink. So maybe this time you're like, maybe they will end up together, maybe she won't turn around, but then she turns, like, oh, Eloise, God, says turn around, and then it's like, ah, my heart.
I just love how that scene where Marianne turns around, I feel like everyone unintentionally gives a loud gasp.
Probably.
It's mandatory. Like when you listen to Hadestown, you always
everyone gasps.
If you have the opportunity to watch the show, you will gasp. You think you won't, but you will.
Shout out to the woman who sat behind me last time I went to see it, the gasp very loudly when Orpheus turned around, and I'm like, Mama, are you okay?
That's how it is. That's how it is. The same thing applies to Portrait.
Yeah, so I really love the scene because of the foreshadowing it holds. It's just so exquisite and rich. And of course, again, they're reading Greek mythology in French. Amen. How European.
Amen.
Juan, any thoughts on the scene?
Honestly, I agree with what you said. It's very similar to my scene where we see the yearning develop, but also we see so much progression in their relationship, and you're just like, I want this to happen. I want this to happen. And then when you get to the turnaround scene, you're like, maybe next time they won't turn around. You have that feeling, you know. It's wonderful. It's honestly wonderful.
Now we are moving into the bonfire scene. Take us away, Anna.
So this scene is basically the turning point of this film, and I just love how it is created in a way that, okay, bonfire, they're surrounded by women, the women are singing, it is a build-up of the crescendo of the score, and you see Eloise and Marianne just stare at each other. It's like a staring contest right there, and just examining each other. Eloise just like walks around and the fire just like she gets caught in the fire, but she still doesn't care. She's just like fixated on Marianne. And in a way, it's like they're both zoning out on each other, and that's the moment where they realize their feelings. And in a way, like literally she's on fire, and metaphorically she is fire, because you have Eloise as the soul that she, you know, in a way she's kind of angry, she has energy, she has tension because of what's happening to her, because she's getting married off, and she is that kind of fire. However, what she doesn't realize it, but the other people around her, they realize that she has fire, and she has caught fire in her dress, and se la pagan. And in a way, I saw it as like, what's gonna happen to her, because she is the fire and the mom is the one that literally is like burning that fire out, like with her like getting married and such. And next thing you know, that scene cuts off, like a dramatic cut to them finally accepting their feelings to each other. And it is I felt that it was a really powerful scene right there. It is literally the name of the movie. It is metaphorical, it is physical, like getting on fire.
It's the titular role.
Yeah.
It's the titular role.
It is the titular role.
No, I definitely love to equate, like, if I could change the title, it would basically be a portrait of a lady in love, because Siama just subtly makes love feel like an ever-consuming flame. Mm-hmm. Because at that point, like, as you said, immediately after that scene, that what follows is them finally kissing, which is like the epitome of the romance film. You get on like yearning and the longing, and finally you get the kiss. But of course, as we know, within a romance film, they get together. Not by the end. There's likely to be something wrong about to happen in the corner, but we don't think about that yet. We're not thinking about that yet. So this scene, I think my favorite part is how it also, we bring it back to the beginning where Marianne is looking at the old portrait and she happens to ignite a flame over her heart. Because Marianne is the one that's going to ignite a flame in her. And then you see this moment where they're just staring at each other. And then she just catches fire and she doesn't care because they have each other and they see each other. And like they both, like the observer and the observed, and it's interchangeable and the power dynamics are equal. And it's just so much respect and so much longing. And it's like, wow, they finally realize like, oh, this is happening. This is happening. I really like this person. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, and then there's the Easter egg of like the fire que se le está apagando.
Mm-hmm.
What's gonna happen at the end of the film?
Yeah, because everyone else is trying to snuff that fire out because they can't be together. She's about to get married with someone else.
I also took the scene quite literally, because when she did set, to me, she set the dress on fire. Because she was caught into the emotional crosshairs of what is falling in love. And when she got set on fire, you know, you're taught, you look at fire, fire is dangerous. Fire is something you need to stay away from. But it, the way Marianne was looking at her, it's as if she was caught, in, like you're watching a car crash. You know you should look away, but you can't because you're so engaged in what's happening and what's unfolding. And the tension between those two. As she sees the dresses on fire, she knows she should put out the fire, but she doesn't want to let it go. Because in that moment, those two had never been more alive. Because in that moment, they both realized the fire shouldn't be extinguished between the two. Because they had just gotten to the point where they just got the flame that they needed to pursue what they wanted. They're finally acknowledging it in that moment. And leaving it on fire, you know it's wrong. But in that moment, it felt so right.
Yeah, like when you finally get to, like, if you could hold a flame in your hand and not get hurt. I mean, come on. It's that kind of feeling. It's like being able to hold the sacred thing and then it being taken away from you. That's basically the film. Sadness. Yeah. But also, one thing that I really like about the scene is that it's the first time we hear music in a film devoid of a score. So Siama really saved that for the most epitomous moment ever.
Yeah. And also, she actually wrote the lyric.
Yes, which I was reading it earlier, and I'm going to look it up.
Yeah.
Oh, where was her best original song nomination?
Thank you.
It was wrote in Latin, and yes. It means they can fly. And she basically said it's an adaptation of a sentence by Friedrich, who basically says, the higher we soar, the smaller we appear to those who cannot fly.
Yeah, and in that moment, sparks are flying because the fire is catching on her dress.
She's a masterpiece. The first time I cried in this movie wasn't at the end. It was actually in this scene because it was so beautiful.
I was rewatching it early and I just started sobbing. I'm like, what is going on?
It's just when you realize that you're in love for the first time. That's what this scene is.
Yeah, it literally is. Because I think one of my favorite scenes also that is kind of funny and always makes me laugh is when Eloise asks Marianne what falling in love feels like. And Marianne is too stunned to speak. And she stays quiet. And then... the other, le digo la compañera, because I forgot her name and I feel so bad, but la otra muchacha, she falls, and I'm like, that is hilarious, because it literally feels like falling. Siama, you are a comedian! Yeah, so I love how every scene is super subtle, and I love how Siama doesn't push things in your face, but they're still there, mm-hmm. and you can easily see them if you pay attention, but I love how she still lets you, like, find out on your own.
Just like Marianne was finding out on her own emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And as you look mm-hmm. back through everything, you see that all the pieces were there. You just needed to look and explore with your own eyes, because everyone will get to their destination how they're supposed to. It's part mm-hmm. of the journey.
So my pick was Vivaldi. Oh my God, Josie, insert the song here. I chose, and I refer to both moments where we hear the Vivaldi song play, because it's also the few times that music is used in the film. And so in the end, we see, spoiler alert, which if you haven't seen Portrait, first of all, what are you doing with your life? Second, why are you listening? Stop this episode and go watch Portrait. So at the end, we see Marianne narrates about the last time she ever saw Eloise. And it was at a Vivaldi concert. And the song Summer starts playing. And we see Eloise crying to the song in a balcony. And, you know, it's an open ending because Marianne had played her that exact same song during their time at the house when Eloise revealed that she had never listened to music. She never learned. And so that is the song that Marianne plays to teach her and show her what it is like. So it is assumed that she is crying because she remembers Marianne and misses her, and that she is the one person that she truly loves. And she's very lonely. And it's just spectacular use of music, because the first time that you hear it, it foreshadows at the end, because you wouldn't think that such a small, you know, such a scene between two women teaching each other music would add up to such an impactful ending. Like, at least when I first saw it, I saw that scene, was like, aw, cute. And then at the end, it's like, oh, pain. I just love how, yeah, like Josie has mentioned before, how the film doesn't have a score, but it is those significant scenes, like the Portrait of a Lady on Fire scene that we were just discussing with Anna, and this scene prove the impact that the scenes that have music have on you emotionally, because you don't realize what how important it is until it is used to perfection.
That in that moment you realize that was really the first person Marianne truly loved. And in that moment, she is the one that got away. So when he heard the music, we've all had, I think, that moment where a song can associate you and unlock a memory with someone you used to know in the past, someone you used to love, a memory that literally you connect with in that moment as the song starts. So in that moment, when she hears Summer by Vivaldi, it just triggers that emotional, I don't want to say emotional damage, but that emotional overhaul that just sends her over, because she knew that that time they had together was probably the happiest she had ever been. And she wants that time back. She wants to keep living in that moment. But as you said, the ending is so open. We don't know if they do have a second chance or if that's just a moment she'll never be able to live again because she is the one that got away.
Oh, it also just feels that it is one of those moments that Eloise finally had the chance to just be alone by herself and just be emotional and, you know, strip raw. And it's just one of those chances where she finally gets to be vulnerable. You just feel that. And on the other hand, we finally get to see Marianne as being the poet in the story.
After she had taken down all those walls for Eloise and she felt like someone could actually see who she is for everything she is, she had to build those walls back up. So when she sees her again, all those walls come coming down, and she realizes the person she used to be is probably the happiest version of herself.
But you get to ask yourself, that is she really like happy or not, you know, living that life? And it's, I don't know, it's just depressing.
Yeah, I think some notes I took rewatching it again this time was, of course, it's one of the first times out of all these scenes that she doesn't look back at her, which is so sad. Also that they're both the only two unaccompanied women Siama allows us to see, which I found very interesting. Also, I noticed this time that they're both wearing similar colors.
What?
Yeah, which goes with my theory that, because I find it so funny, number one, that this entire movie is basically Marianne giving a painting class to students and then going off about that one summer she had an affair with a lady. If you think about it, the entire film is her telling them why she painted that.
Oh my God.
The entire narration is to her class, and I'm like, yo quiero ser maestra. Cuéntame de tu verano. Como una relación lésbica. I'm ready. But also, when you see Marianne at the beginning of the film, she is wearing the same color Eloise used to wear, even though like she always wore red and then she was wearing blue. She was also holding her hand. This like whole hands were in the same position that Eloise always had them, which shows that she has been forever changed by her. And that is proven again in the Vivaldi scene because they are both wearing similar colors. So they have both been forever changed by each other, which is so sad.
Yeah. And you can also see it in because Eloise got a lot of the painting of herself, and you see the book, and the book has the paste.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just a hint of saying to her, like, hey, I'm still thinking about you.
Sí, me gustaría pensar que, I don't know, this would have been me. I would have gone outside, como si yo estuviese, pretend que tú estás en Choli, and you see, like, your ex en un concierto, like, across. You're gonna try and, like, meet up with them outside. You're going, te dejaste de tu esposo.
Yeah, in that moment, Bad Bunny está cantando Otra Noche en Miami. You see that person.
Está cantando Yonaguni.
Yonaguni, yes, exactly.
En el 2023.
Followed by La Noche de Anoche. Followed by La Noche de Anoche. And you see your ex across the room, and you start to wonder, is my time for La Noche de Anoche to become La Noche de Hoy?
I like to believe they saw each other outside of the theater.
And they ran away together.
And again, they went to that lesbian villa I mentioned earlier by the French shore. And they were happy together. And they both raised Eloise's daughter. And they're living off of Eloise's deceased husband's money.
Secure the heart, then secure the bag.
He passed away due to heart failure. I already wrote the ending. Siama, it's done. Anything else we'd like to discuss before we sign off?
Oh, so when I was rewatching some scenes, there was one that also stood out, and how Maryam went and hugged Eloise's mom, even though they never had anything interaction, because if she only hugged Eloise, it would have been awkward and suspicious.
Oh my gosh, I've been there.
So she was like, let me hug the mom first and then her.
Me siento atacada en este momento. Because I've done that. I feel red. Pero sí. No, es que everything is so careful. And you can see her, like, conniving. Like, sometimes if she slips up, she makes up for it somehow.
Y la cosa es que, and also that scene is where she tries her wedding dress. And her wedding dress, there's this one specific shot that it kind of looks like ghost-like. Como que mm-hmm. Also dressed in white means that you're dead. So, basically, it's like, she's feeling dead inside, guys.
See, también because whenever we see her in kind of like that spectral shape, it's the memory of her. Because again, Marianne is the poet and she chooses the memory of her because she can't have her. So what else is she left with?
She's left with a wonderful saying that she says to herself. And she says, somehow, heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
Con eso perfecto para terminar. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you liked this episode. And honestly, that's actually all for the episode. We'd like to thank you for listening and to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. If you would like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at FilmPosers on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. And you know what? Please let us know if there are any films you think we should break down next. Where can they find you, posers?
So you can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27 and on Letterboxd at Gabby Cristina.
And you can find me on Twitter as Anna_Sofia53 and on Letterboxd as Anna_Sofia.
You can find me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at Leading Mohicans.
And you can find me at The Josie Marie on Twitter and Letterboxd. Again, thank you for listening. And remember, we're all film posers. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.